Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Well, here's a switch. CEOs in America getting nervous about holding their jobs in 2022. Meanwhile, tornado victims fighting back in the courts in Kentucky. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and the stagehands, IATSE Local 140 out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Welcome to the Tuesday, December 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Two guests on the show today, and this being the fourth Tuesday of the month, last month of 2021, that goes to Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, longtime general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. GoIAM.org is their website. Tom's been retired for about 6-7 years now, and he loves the show, still wanted to contribute to it. And pretty much we're going to reflect on the year that was 2021. Started off with the insurrection, January 6th in Washington. Biden becomes president. Big changes in Washington at the National Labor Relations Board, a union-friendly administration, union-friendly guy in the Labor Department. We saw the passage of the American Rescue Plan, the Infrastructure Jobs Bill, and hopefully going into the new year, Build Back Better. We'll cover it all. We'll also take a look at corporate America and how companies have reacted along with the American public to the vaccine. Lots to cover. What a year. So Tom's going to be our first guest. Also, I'm going to touch on a story that I got off the AFL-CIO website about some workers in New York, architectural workers, mind you, that are organizing. And I'll tell you, we have seen so many people in the professional sector organizing. Yesterday, I was talking about research scientists at the University of Washington. And in this case, you've got workers that are trying to pay off their student debt. I mean, when you go and become an architecture expert, when you study that, it costs a lot of money in schooling. And these workers are trying to pay off their student loans, and they are not making ends meet. So we'll touch on that. They want to organize with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Later in the show, Aaron Kellum will be joining us out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Aaron is with IATSE Local 140, and I love their website, local140.rocks. How about that website? local140.rocks. And being with the stagehands, a couple things we're going to get into. First of all, they got a new contract. And apparently, this is covering the Chattanooga, Tennessee area. They got a 24% wage increase. Pretty darn good. I'm going to figure out how they were able to accomplish that. COVID, the impact of COVID, especially in theater, stage hands. And here's the big story to watch out for in 2022. Tennessee, which is a right-to-work state. They're one of, I believe, 27 in the country. They are putting forward, or trying to, pass a constitutional amendment to embed right to work in the state constitution. So it could never be repealed. Unless you throw out the constitution, that's not going to happen. We talked about this on the show a couple of times with some of our labor friends in the state of Tennessee, and they are fighting really hard to make sure this does not happen. Right to work. If you get an opportunity, a lot of you have some time off, especially between Christmas and New Year's, just Google right to work, because, and I say this on the show so many times, it sounds so good. Oh, I should have the right to work. You can't stop me from working. I should be able to work wherever I want to. Educate yourself on right to work. please do that, because it should be called Right to Work for Less. And if you take a look at the states in America, 27 of them, that have right to work laws, you will see lower wages, lower benefits, lousy health care, lousy pensions. It's a race to the bottom. And that's exactly what they're trying to embed in the Constitution in the state of Tennessee. So Aram Kellum will touch on that and more as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. We were talking yesterday with Bill Londrigan, who is the president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, and we spent a lot of time on labor's effort to clean up after the tornadoes happened 3 weeks ago. And I want to give a shout out here to the International Brotherhood of Teamsters and the Laborers International Union of North America, two proud sponsors of America's Workforce, who really, really helped down there, along with the IBEW, the United Association, and the Elevator Constructors Union. That's just to mention a few. And I asked Bill yesterday about the workers in the candle factory. It's the Mayfield Candle Factory. Mayfield was devastated by that tornado, Mayfield, Kentucky. And he talked about what rights they have, because they were told not to leave. Well, guess what? There is a court case. That's right. Survivors of the tornado that leveled the factory, killing 8 workers, have now filed a lawsuit claiming their employer demonstrated, quote, flagrant indifference by refusing to allow employees to go home early as the storm approached. As the legal fallout from the catastrophic weather started surfacing, steady rainfall added to the misery of the survivors as they picked through what remained of their homes. Roofers patched holes and cleanup crews removed massive piles of downed trees and other debris. Storm-stricken parts of western Kentucky now getting up to 2 inches of rain. 2 inches of rain. It's a total mess down there. Andy Beshear, who is the governor, said it's not right for the people who have had their homes knocked down, trying now to salvage it, having all this rain on top of it. Well, getting back to the lawsuit accuses the Mayfield Consumer Products Candle Production Company of violating Kentucky Occupational Safety and Health Workplace Standards by keeping its staff at work despite the danger of death and injury. The lawsuit claims that workers were threatened with termination if they left in the hours before the tornado hit. The suit is seeking compensatory and punitive damages. Amos Jones, a Washington, D.C.-based attorney representing the employees, said it's a straightforward claim, exactly what this statute was meant to address. Bob Ferguson, speaking on behalf of the company located in Mayfield, previously insisted that employees were free to leave any time, and he denied that they would have faced retribution if they left the factory. The company's CEO said in a statement that the company was retaining an independent expert team to review the actions of managers and employees leading up to when the tornado struck the factory. The lawsuit claims the factory had up to 3.5 hours before the tornado hit its place of business to allow its employees to leave its work site as a safety precaution. The factory showed flagrant difference to the rights of the workers by refusing to do so, said the lawsuit. One employee, Haley Condor, told the Associated Press that a supervisor threatened her with written disciplinary action if she went home early. Crowder questioned why the company did not encourage workers to go home or at least give them a better understanding of the danger between the first tornado siren that was at 6 p.m. and then another one at 9 p.m. shortly before the tornado hit. The only plaintiff identified in the lawsuit is Elijah Johnson, who was working the night shift at the candle factory when the storm struck. The wording of the lawsuit says it was filed by Johnson on behalf of others similarly situated Others aren't identified for fear of reprisal, according to the attorney. That's so sad. They can't even put their names down there because they think they're still going to get fired because they're suing the company. That was a really good show that we did yesterday. If you go to awfradio.com, it's archived there. Bill Londrigan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, he did a shout-out, too, to all the unions that helped out. And it's always like that, too. You see any kind of a tragedy, you see union brothers and sisters coming together. How about this story? CEOs are nervous they might lose their job. I couldn't believe this when I read this. I go, what? New survey shows that 72%, that's almost 3 out of 4, of chief executive officers are worried about losing their jobs next year because of business disruptions. That's an eye-popping high, said Simon Freakley, the CEO of management consulting firm Alex Partners, the source of the survey. He's referring to disruptive forces like the supply chain and the labor market, which is kind of in flux right now. The story goes on to say that big bosses are always worried about losing their jobs, especially at public companies where the potential for a sudden adios comes with a cushy chair. Oh, yeah. But the fear of imminent firing figure surged from 52% in 2020, which itself was a high anxiety year. Alex Partners took the pulse of 3,000 CEOs and executives at the director level and around 10 industries they covered, half with revenues more than $1 billion. Supply chain, labor market, digitalization all topped the executives' list of concerns. While the global pandemic exacerbated the situation, COVID-19 itself was notably missing from the top 10 concerns for next year. That's interesting. Freakley, in an interview, said he has a theory as to what's driving the fear of getting ousted. Leaders who were relieved to survive 2020 with their business intact discovered this year that instead of pressures ebbing, they were mired in a continuing pandemic, even as shareholders demanded growth. He said they realized that their business models, which have served them well for a number of years, are now not fit for the purpose, and they're rushing to build local, regional, and global supply chains. We went from what was a rolling sea of worry about economic cycles to a choppy sea of all those disruptive forces. So I don't know if we just throw a pity party here for CEOs, but they're worried about losing their jobs. Stand in line, buddy. My gosh. And speaking of CEOs, new report by the Economic Policy Institute reveals that CEO compensation has grown by more than 1,300% since 1978, shattering the dismal 18% growth in a typical worker's annual compensation during the same time period. Okay? CEOs, 1,300% increase since 1978. The average worker, 18%. In just 1 year, between 2019 and 2020, as the pandemic raged and millions of Americans were thrown out of work and into economic misery, CEO compensation skyrocketed nearly 20%. In 1965, CEO to worker compensation ratio, 21 to 1. You know what it is now? 351 to 1. We are way out of whack in America. All right, quick break. When we come back, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. And this year, they celebrated 50 years. Started in Cleveland, Ohio, 1971. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, longtime supporter and contributor of America's Workforce, and that would be Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, our independent labor observer. Hey, Tommy, welcome back to the show, and how was your holiday?
Great to be back with you, Flash. The holiday went great. Grandkids had a great time. My kids had a great time, and old granddad now is trying to find a few hours of catch-up rest.
I hear you. How many years were you retired from the machinist now, Tommy?
On January the 1st, this Saturday, it'll be 6 years.
That's what I thought. I figure it was around six or seven. Boy, it just flew by, didn't it?
It did, Flash, and it's moving even faster.
Well, I want to recap this year. And a lot happened this year. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of people that don't get the message that they should probably get vaccinated because this virus, which is now mutated several times, has just taken over. And in fact, you were saying that you had some plans to get on a plane. That's not going to happen now, is it?
No. I doubt it very strongly. Every year in January, a couple friends of mine, we've been doing this for 30 years, having a little outing in South Texas. And since we're all getting up there in age and given the conditions and the times we're living in, I think we postpone this once again.
I hear you.
If people were vaccinated, Flash, if people were civil, I worry even now about what happens on an airplane once you're on. The stories of passengers and flight crews and the conflicts going on, it's just a bad time to be a traveler.
You know, I saw a story on ABC News last night. There was a woman on a flight, and she was getting into it with an older guy. And they tried to calm her down, and it was just ridiculous. And finally, when the plane landed, well, federal agents were waiting outside. She's now in jail. And the fines are exorbitant. I believe it's like $35,000 for a fine. And again, this pretty much had to do with someone who did not want to wear a mask. Is there a certain kind of crazy out there, Tom? What's your take on America?
I don't get it. It's a Flash. I'll just say it's kind of like a special kind of stupid here. If first of all, the person themselves should care enough about themselves and their family to take advantage of all the wonders we have, like a vaccine, like the precautions that we're supposed to take, masking up, washing your hands, etc. But when you don't care about anybody else, that's just not right. It's not the moral thing to do. And some of these incidents on planes, I feel bad for the flight attendants and bad for the crew. And I feel really bad for other passengers who play by the rules, try to be safe, care about the people they're around. And all they want to do, Flash, is get from point A to point B with as least amount of hassle as possible. And it always takes one person who just can't see other people abiding by the rules. Now, I just don't understand this.
Tom, there's another group you should feel bad for, and that's the CEOs in America. I just did a story, and this is a survey that came out yesterday, shows that 3 out of 4 chief executive officers are worried about losing their jobs next year. How about that? They're
well,
worried.
I'll tell you what. They can join the rest of the working world, because I happen to know a lot of folks that aren't CEOs that actually make things for people and do things for people, and they've been worried about stuff like this for years. And I don't know why the CEOs would be worried. You know, I'm looking at what Wall Street is turning in every day. It's like been a roller coaster, ups and downs. But overall, if you measure the success of the economy by the performance of Wall Street, it's been a pretty good year.
Right, right.
So what are they worried about?
I don't know. Well, apparently the story is about the supply chain, and they feel if they can't continue doing their business model as it's been done for years, there's going to be a disruption. It's going to affect the profits, the earnings of the companies, and then the shareholders are going to say, all right, we don't want them in that position anymore. But how many times have you seen this when a CEO leaves a company? Don't they end up at another company, Tom? You've seen this in years past.
Oh, listen, Flash, I'm glad you brought this up. I was going to. I would love to leave or get fired or whatever in America as a CEO, because they all end up with more money. They get a lot of money to leave. That's what gets me. When you get fired as a CEO, they shove millions of dollars at you to go away quietly.
Right.
I could get fired like that. Then they end up at another company making even more money. I mean, the CEO's life is really tough today. I mean, getting fired, so what? The worst thing that happens is that brings you a big pay raise.
Exactly.
And what's this about the supply chain? This is one of my pet peeves right now. Everybody wants to blame the President of the United States for the supply chain issues, especially CEOs. Now, just think about this for a moment. CEOs and companies want the government off their back, out of their life as much as possible. They'll take care of the country, they say. So now a pandemic brings chaos to just about everything in our lives. And now they want to blame the president because of it. It's the CEO's fault that we have a supply chain issue. These guys who tout themselves as the brightest, the smartest, the greatest businessmen ever screwed this one up royally. You could see this coming. It is not the president's fault. It's not the government's fault. I really believe if you look at the performance of our government, delivering vaccines, making things available to Americans like the unemployment benefits, like plans covered under the COVID relief bill, covered by the Build Back Better plan, the government's done more to deliver than any CEO in private business. And they're blaming their problems today on the government? I don't think so. And I hope the listeners pay attention to this, because this attitude of it's not my fault, that's kind of the attitude of the former administration. It's not my fault. Well, it's the fault of the CEOs this time for not assuring that they can deliver their own company's products or services to the consumer. And maybe these CEOs now, Flash, deserve to be fired, let go, and bring in some visionary leaders who understand working with their workers, their employees, making a team effort might just be the way out of the mess we're in today.
Tom, I want to talk about Boeing, and you know the history of that company because the machinist, when you were general president, worked with Boeing for many, many years. And this company has really, really changed its complexion over the years. I'd like you to focus on that because, I mean, they were, my gosh, a giant in the Seattle area, and it's now, I guess, a distant memory. So explain what happened to this one giant corporation in America, Tom.
Well, it is a giant corporation. It's America's. It produces the bulk of what America ships abroad and made here, that's Boeing. It's the biggest exporter from America that there is. And that may change. Boeing changed when they merged with McDonnell Douglas. And instead of taking on the vision, the philosophy of the Boeing Company kept all their assets. They adopted the management practices of McDonnell Douglas, which was on its way of going out of business. And now Boeing suffers from the same thing. The people who run Boeing today don't come from Boeing. They are accountants and lawyers and politicians and former government folks. There's no Boeing people left running Boeing anymore. Just in the last few days, Flash, this company announced that they have sold the commercial airplane headquarters building, the real estate, in Seattle, and that they moved their big flight training. This is where they train pilots. They moved that center from Seattle to Miami. And this is a huge signal now. On the heels of maybe 20 years ago, selling the corporate headquarters and moving the corporate headquarters to Chicago, Boeing is signaling by their actions that they don't see their future anymore in Seattle. There are 30,000 IAM members there who do a great job building the best airplanes in the world. And what a terrible signal to send to them that Boeing is now looking at turning off the lights in Seattle, this time not by some economic catastrophe, but by choice. And so I think the way it's scattering itself out to plants like in South Carolina that are non-union and where they're continuing to have a lot of production problems and putting plants in different areas, all right-to-work non-union states, that Boeing's going to be one of those companies that ends up in the history books of American business and not a driver of the history in American business. It's a sad state of affairs. I don't have the inside details that I once did, but surely what's available now for public consumption doesn't look good at all.
And what happened at Boeing is just an example of what has happened to pretty much all of corporate America. It's the race to the bottom. It really is the race to the bottom. Tom, hold that thought. When we come back, I want to talk about organizing. In fact, a really good story out of New York about some architects joining the machinists. We'll touch on that. Later in the show, Aaron Kellum will be joining us on behalf of IATSE Local 140. Out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Love their website, local140.rocks. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin our independent labor observer, longtime contributor to America's Workforce. That would be Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And Tommy, I want to share with you some good news out of New York. Employees at Shop Architects in New York are now seeking to become the first private sector architectural workers to successfully organize since, you ready for this, the 1940s. More than 130 eligible employees at the firm have signed cards in support of forming a union with the machinists. The firm is known for work in the Barclay Center in Brooklyn and the Steinway Tower just south of Central Park. The workers are seeking to reduce their workload and increase pay after they reported working long hours for pay that does not allow them to pay off the thousands of dollars of student debt that they have accumulated. So once again, we're seeing a non-traditional sector organizing. Why? Because they need better wages, better benefits. Yesterday, I was talking about the research scientists out of the University of Wisconsin. They are in the process of affiliating with the United Auto Workers. And in this case, you got the machinists joining in with the architects. So it's happening all around America. And Tom, as we wrap up this year, you got to feel pretty good about next year going into the new year with this bump in organizing, where people who were deemed essential frontline workers saying, you know what, if I don't have a union, I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here. And look at Starbucks. There's another example. So I'd like to get your opinion. How do you feel about 2022 now?
I feel that there's a lot of optimism in the field of organizing that can come about in 2022, and the architects are just an example of it. They recognize the value of collective bargaining. Usually in the field of work that professionals are oftentimes in, they're trained from their earliest days in school that they can write their ticket, they can do this, they can do that. They don't need anybody between them and the boss. Well, people are, maybe it's induced by the pandemic, but people are coming to the realization that by yourself, you have no power. But when you band together and form a collective, that's another term for union, you have power, and you can exercise economic pressure upon those who pay your salary to treat you better, pay you better, and respect you just a little bit better. And that's what the architects are finding. It's librarians have joined the machinists. We have medical personnel in the machinist union. We have the architects. The list of people that are in more professional trades, and yes, it's non-traditional for the machinist union, and just like the auto workers experience and the steel workers in their worlds, people understand what unions can deliver through collective bargaining. When they look at the membership and the trades, the skills, the professions that these unions represent, they're starting to understand once again, there's power in working together. There's power in teamwork. There's power in collective bargaining. And it's driving them to unions. And the fact that they are coming to establish unions with a history, with a track record, says a lot versus those who say, I'm going to form my own union and we're going to do this or that for whatever skill or craft or profession they represent. I think it's a good sign for all of us out there, for all the unions. And I'm looking forward that in 2022, people understand once again, just like we did in the 1930s and 1940s, unions bring value to people's lives, and it's worth unions are worth fighting for.
I keep going back to the figure that keeps popping up on the AFL-CIO website. There's 60 million people in America right now, today, 60 million people that if given the opportunity, they would join a union. And for so many years, there's been roadblocks. Well, there's still roadblocks. I mean, look what's going on with Amazon. Although they're starting to pave the way on that. I got a story just the other day that Amazon has reached a settlement with the National Labor Relations Board that should make it easier for the workers to organize. I don't know how that happened, but that's just a sign of the times.
The last clause in that agreement, Flash, is that Jeff Bezos gets on one of those rocket ships and he stays up in space longer than 9 minutes.
Well, he's no longer the CEO, but he's still in control.
We know who pulls the strings.
Right, exactly. So with what I just said, though, I mean, people want unions, and union, as far as Gallup has done several surveys on this, as far as favorability, it's between 64% and 67%. That hasn't been the case in almost 50 years. And Liz Schuler, I talked about this the other day. She is going to concentrate, and all of labor is going to concentrate on tech workers. You know, we were mentioning the architects, the research workers, and this is where America is right now. It's technology, and they want to be organizing. So she is going to concentrate on that. With that being said, Tom, can you reflect on the transition here in labor? I mean, you had a new president, Biden takes over, we had the American Rescue Plan, we've got an infrastructure bill. I mean, a lot of good things happen here, even though a lot of people feel that Biden's not up to snuff. His poll numbers are low, but there's a lot on his plate. I get that. But there was a major thing that happened in 2021. It was the passing of the baton. And sadly, it was the passing of Rich Trumka that allowed for that to happen. And I know you knew Rich pretty darn well, didn't you?
We began this today talking about my travel plans. Rich was one of the guys I would travel with in our annual trip to Texas. And this year it's going to be, I doubt our trip happens, but it's going to be sad because Rich is no longer with us. He did a great job. He needs to be remembered as a huge piece of American labor history and all that he accomplished. And look at the times he helmed the organization through the Trump years, through bad times and ups and downs. And he left quite a legacy. And part of that legacy was in Liz Schuler, who was the Secretary Treasurer, Rich's teammate at the AFL-CIO. Liz took over, everybody was shocked to get the news when Rich suddenly passed away. But Liz stepped into the breach. She never flinched. And she took over and quickly began to put her mark on it and everything, and really has stressed this thing of now this is even another bad time we have to handle. I need teamwork and I need leadership, and she's been providing it, and she's demanding that from the affiliate unions of the AFL-CIO. I give her a AAA+ for everything she's done. And I just when you think we get a Democratic government, a president in both houses of our legislature, only to see one or two people throw the monkey wrench into all the good things that can happen, it takes a special person to be able to keep it together and keep driving forward. And that's what Liz has done. So it's been a momentous year for the labor movement. I think we end up with a lot more opportunities ahead of us than we began this year. And I think we've got the right kind of leadership, both in the affiliate unions and certainly at the AFL-CIO, to make 2022 a year we deliver on these opportunities.
Well said, my man. We're going to leave it on that note. I want to be optimistic, and hopefully we can get the PRO Act, which is now labeled the Rich Trumka Protect the Right to Organize Act. And that would change so many dynamics when it comes to labor law in America. Number one, get rid of right to work. 27 states, right to work. We're going to talk about that next on the show with a member of the Stagehands Union. So, Tom, I'm going to leave it there. You take care. You have a happy, happy new year. We'll talk to you in January. Okay, my brother?
Absolutely. And the best happy new year to you and all the listeners, Flash.
Quick break. When we come back, Aaron Kellum will be joining us on behalf of IATSE Local 140 out of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Chattanooga, Tennessee right now. And joining us on line number two is Aaron Kellum. Aaron is a business agent with IATSE Local 140. Website is local140.rocks. Gotta love a website like that. Aaron Kellum, welcome to America's Workforce. Now, who thought of that? Who thought of 140.rocks? I didn't think that was possible.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, actually, our secretary treasurer, Skip, created our website for us.
Very cool. So you've been involved in the union for a couple of years. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I understand you're from Virginia. How did you find your way to Chattanooga, Tennessee?
Yeah, I was out on tour with a couple of shows right when I moved to Chattanooga back in 2017 and started working for the union on and off in between my tours. And back when COVID hit, the theater scene kind of shut down. So started getting heavily invested in membership and trying to figure out what our next steps were post COVID. And yeah, here we are today, business agent. So yeah.
So what, 75 members in 140? Is that right?
Yep. We've got 75 members growing strong.
Now, you got involved in the union. This is interesting, too, because you're first-generation union. You don't come from a union mm-hmm. family, but you worked, what was it, in a non-union theater, and you realized, yep. wait a minute, this ain't happening for me. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. It was kind of a little bit of shell shock, you know, not able to talk about your pay scale, and everybody's working together because they're a family, so you do what you have to do, long hours type of deal. So I knew once I kind of got out on the road and moved that I definitely wanted to get involved with a union and start following through on that end, because of course, you know, transparency is key. So it's been a great move and I love it.
Very good. You mentioned COVID now, you know, with the variant picking up steam. What's the status over there in Chattanooga right now, Aaron?
Yeah, right now we're not seeing any shows start to cancel. That is a very big fear that's coming down the pipeline. So we'll start to see probably mid-January if we're going to start to see anything cancel. It has affected actual Broadway in New York pretty heavily the past couple weeks, so we're kind of taking cues from them. We have another huge Broadway tour coming through in the middle of January, so we'll see. If they end up canceling, then we got problems.
Yeah, it's kind of touch and go right now. No, I hear you. It's happening all over the country right now, so you have to stay close to the situation. Well, on some good news here, I'm reading that you just reached a new contract with one of your biggest local employers, and I'm reading a 24% wage increase. Well, what's the story here, Aaron? Fill me in. This is great news.
So we actually had not had a signed working agreement at all with this employer. We had been working on it since about 2017. We were one of the lowest paid IOTC unions in our national. So it's very depressing. But we got a $4 raise increase. We got our signed agreement for the first time in 15, 20 years. We got paid holidays. We've got Sunday overtime. We fought really hard, and I feel very proud of where we came from, especially, that 24% raise increase. It's amazing.
How long did it take you to achieve what you were able to accomplish in that? That had to be, you kind of referenced this was not easy. Can you give us any details on that?
Yeah. So we started the conversation back in 2019, actually. And then COVID hit, that kind of put a pause on it. So coming back, we came back probably June 2021. And we went back to the table and started having those discussions and negotiations. Actually had to get our international representatives involved, and kind of came down to the wire before our first Broadway show returned. We got to do something. We can't come back for pennies anymore.
Yeah. Did anybody talk about possibly going out on strike or any kind of a walkout? Did that surface at all throughout the talks?
We kind of did, because it was in conjunction with everything that was going on with the international and the movie side of IOTC, where they were about to go on strike for their negotiations. So luckily it paired really well with that.
Good. Well, it's good that you got some help from national, because we followed what was going on nationally. They almost went on strike there. That came right down to the wire. So. Yeah,
yep.
Interesting times in America, no doubt about that. All right, well, another issue here. You are in a right-to-work state. I feel bad for you. We do the show in the state of Ohio, and they tried to attack public sector bargaining about 10 years ago, but they fought back on that one. and you're one of 27 states that are right to work in America. Now, they want to embed right to work in the state constitution. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Ain't it crazy?
What's the process here? Is this going to be on the ballot? Explain that part to me.
Yeah, it's going to be on the ballot for 2022. So the process started out, Senator Kelsey brought it as a state bill to go over with the whole Senate. And it was in there for about a year and a half. And it made it through the Senate. We fought it pretty hard while it was there. And then it got to the House, and the House passed it last year. So now it's on the ballot. And hopefully we can explain to people that right to work is not actually giving yourself a right to work, and we'll win in Tennessee, but it's going to be hard. Our state AFL-CIO actually did the research, and our working families in Tennessee are actually the people that we need to turn, because even our union families don't understand what right to work actually means. So it's hard to believe, but we've got a lot of work ahead coming up in this next balloting process, and hopefully we'll see a no vote. No to Amendment 1 in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Now, when in 2022 will this be on the ballot?
We vote, I believe, in August.
In August? Oh, that's not a good time. Not a good time to do that. Yeah, a lot of people don't bother voting, especially at an odd time of year. You got the primaries usually in May, and then the general elections in November. That's when you see more people going to the polls. Well, what's the game plan right now? Are you in the strategy session here on what needs to be said and done? I know you're going to be attacked with the big money, because you got, you know, like the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, all the right-wing groups that just love turning states into right-to-work states. And it's unfortunate you are a right-to-work state, but they want to make it more or less permanent by doing that. So can you give us any details on what the game plan is going to be here?
Yeah, I know. I know specifically, like for Chattanooga, one of my personal goals through the Labor Council is to reach out, do some phone banking to as many members as we can, like letting them know, get out to the polls, vote no to the First Amendment, and like as much boots on the ground. If we can do like some rallies, get our people out there and just get some teaching through. I know I haven't heard much from the state AFL-CIO and how they're going to proceed. Hopefully we'll start seeing yard signs. Hopefully they'll do a phone banking rally. We'll see what comes down the pipeline. But yeah, like you said, we got big money to fight here in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, you said four words that are resounding: boots on the ground. Boots on the ground. This is going to be very, very grassroots. And I'll tell you, we monitor what's going on in all states on America's workforce. And in the past year, 2 years, we saw right to work defeated in Missouri, Montana, and New Hampshire. Now, these were legislatures that were trying to turn those states into right to work states. This is a different scenario. So keep us posted. We're here to help. You got to educate people, and to your point, they don't know what right to work is all about. They think it's, oh, I should have the right to work. No, it's not that way. Mm-hmm. It's right to work for less. All right, Aaron, I'm going to leave it on that note. Aaron Kellum, business agent at IATSE Local 140 out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Website, again, is IATSE140.rocks. You take care. Stay strong. We'll talk to you in the new year, okay?
Thank you so much.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, John Nichols of The Nation and the Postal Workers, Local 215. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.